Hey, Chris, can you hear me? This is Nate in Butrovich.
Yes, Nate, I can hear you.
Excellent. Looks like teams are down, so I won't be able to communicate with you, but should be good.
Yeah, we should be good. Do you have my cell number in case you need to text me?
No. Let me write it down.
Yes.
Okay, I'm ready.
723-0125.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. And, yeah, I'll just listen in. Thanks.
Okay, sounds good.
Good afternoon. Let's call this meeting of Senate Resources Committee to order. Please let the record reflect that it is 3:31 p.m. on Monday, March 15th, 2021. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum present today. Our Senator Bishop, Senator Stevens, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Keel, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Rivak. Staffing the committee today is committee aide Betty Tangeman, LIO moderator Alex Banizak, and we have Christopher Dickrell online from records. Please make sure your cell phones are off. Today's agenda consists of three items. SJR 8, University of Alaska Land Grant, Senate Bill 79, Hunting, Trapping, Fishing for Disabled Vets, and Senate Bill 64, Shellfish Enhancement Projects. So we'll start with SJR 8, University of Alaska Land Grant. Our plan is to hear about the resolution, take public testimony, and hopefully move the bill. The first thing we need to do is adopt a committee substitute for this bill. Could I please get a motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to adopt the committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 8, version 32-LS0420/B.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I'll object for the purposes of discussion. And Mr. Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens, if you could please put yourself on the record and explain these changes for us.
Maybe just a comment.
Sure. Senator Stevens, please.
Just very briefly, and Tim will take care of this. But you should know that the University of Alaska currently refers to its situation as being land deficit. So I think that's really, really telling. And I would encourage you to look at the final resolution here, the resolve section. It really shows us where we are right now. And this is a response to our congressional delegation in helping them to get something like this done. Thank you. I'll turn it over to Mr. Lankin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you should be the resolution SJR 8 version B is Bravo. I'll share with you this CS is a result of about a year of working with the university and Department of Natural Resources, and those two agencies in particular, to carefully craft some language that everyone can agree upon and send a message to our Congress to help the university resolve its land deficit situation that's been going on for decades. That's all the summary I'd like to share with you as regards the overall resolution. I can go into the summary of changes if you wish at this time.
Do we have any questions? Please, Mr. Lampkin.
So in the interest of time, I'll just share with you that most of the changes, one through seven, are again a collaboration between DNR and the university and wordsmithing it and using language and verbiage that was comfortable for them. So I'd like to just skip over that and really just draw your attention to the changes, the most substantive ones on change 8 on page 2. Whereas there were a couple of additional resolves included that essentially calls upon Congress to reintroduce the University Fiscal Foundation Act, and secondly, that the legislature make the statement that they wish for the university and DNR to continue to collaborate cooperatively together towards this end. That is overall a summary of changes and the most significant ones that I wanted to share with the committee. And with that, we have some representatives from the university that should be online at this time. I don't believe it was noted, but just for their benefit to indicate, we've had some trouble with MS Teams today, and so everything is obliged to be on the audio format.
Well, thank you. And yes, and it looks like we have testimony from Ed Fogle at the University of Alaska. Ed, could you please put yourself on the record and give us your invited testimony?
You bet, Chair Rebeck. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Rebeck and members of the committee. My name is Ed Fogles. I've been retained by the University of Alaska to advise their land management office. Specifically, I've been tasked with helping them obtain their remaining land grant entitlements. I have a PowerPoint presentation, which I believe should be on your screen, which I will run through fairly briefly. But essentially, if you go to slide two, the university land grants, the problem we are trying to rectify is that the university did not receive its full land grant entitlement from the federal government. The expectation was for an additional 90,000 acres under a federal act called the Morrill Act and another 270,000 acres under an act called the 1915 Wickersham Act. These two federal acts were in effect superseded by the Alaska Statehood Act, which gave the state 103 million acres of its land grant entitlement. So to date, the university only received 111,000 acres from the federal government, and this along with other lands has put its total land portfolio at 151,000 acres. So if you would move to slide three, please. Slide three shows a sort of a synopsis of the university of current land holdings, kind of alongside the missing 360,000 acres. You can see that of the 151,000 acres, 12,000 acres is in a category called educational, which is used for research purposes and facilities. The investment part of the portfolio at 139,000 acres is what they manage to generate revenue for the university, and you can see the breakdown of the different investment classes that they have in and they are managing for. If you go to slide four, please, you will see a comparison of the University of Alaska's land grant acreage with the University of Texas, who's got 2.1 million acres and has generated over 21.4 billion acres cumulatively since they started managing this lands. By comparison, the Mental Health Trust has 1 million acres. They generated $10.6 million in 2019. And the University of Alaska's portfolios generated 6.8 million acres in 2019. And in an overview, the University of Alaska has generated more than 220 million acres from its trust land assets since the 80s. You would go to slide five, please.
Mr. Chairman, let me pause.
If we could, we're going to take a quick pause there, Mr. Lampkin.
Tim Lampkin, just Mr. Fogel, there was a misstatement there. I believe you used $21.4 billion generated, not 21.4 billion acres. I just want to clarify that for the record.
Okay, I am sorry. I misspoke. The University of Texas generated $21.4 billion cumulative as of 2019. My apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Fogel. Please continue.
Okay, on slide number five, fulfilling UA's land grant. Now, there's no question in my mind that a larger land endowment for the university would provide financial security for the university in the long term and moderate the state general fund support needed for the university. The state has tried before. In early 2000s, state legislation conveyed 250,000 acres to the university. But in 2009, Alaska Supreme Court decision ruled that that conveyance of land violated the Constitution's prohibition on dedicated funds. So those lands had to all be reconveyed back to the state. And the federal government has already given the state its significant land entitlement, so we're not going to get any more from the federal government. If you go to slide six, framework for solution. So how do we fix this? Dedications are constitutionally not allowed, so we have to look, and we're not going to get any land from the feds, so we're looking at a solution that's going to be a collaborative state-federal program. And we've been working with the Alaska Congressional Delegation, the governor, with the Department of Natural Resources, and the Department of Interior to come up with an alternate mechanism by which the university can get its federal land grant entitlement. If you turn to slide seven, the University of Alaska Fiscal Foundation Act, this federal legislation was introduced in Congress by Alaska's congressional delegation. And what this does, it establishes a federal program by which the Department of Interior would convey 360,000 acres of federal land to the university, and this 360,000 acres would come from the state's remaining land entitlements. Currently, the state is has the state's land entitlement is approximately 105 million acres, of which the state has already received 100 million acres. So there are 5 million acres still left to convey to the state of Alaska. So under this federal program, the Department of Interior would carve off 360,000 acres of this remaining 5 million acres to go to the state, and instead of going to DNR for management, it would go to the university for management. The legislation would mandate that the Department of Interior would provide technical assistance identifying lands into this program. And although this legislation did not succeed in last year, we are working with the delegation towards reintroducing this legislation in this Congress. So, members of the committee, that was a very, concise and short explanation of a very large endeavor on our part, and I'll stand ready to answer any questions that the committee might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fogle. Senator Machicki has a question.
Thank you, Ed. Question for you. In your presentation and in the bill, page 2, line 25, you say up to 360,000 acres. What does that mean? Is the 360 the max, and why up to?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, yes, that would be the maximum amount of land that the university could get under this federal program. As I mentioned earlier, the 360,000 acres came through calculating the unfulfilled entitlements that we got under that we would have gotten under the Morrill Act and the Wickersham Act that we did not get. So that is where the 360,000 acre number was derived from. The university would really like to get the full 360,000 acres, but I think just for drafting purposes on these bills, we've kept it at a cap, and if we don't get the full 360,000 acres, so be it. We would like to increase our land entitlement to improve the university's fiscal soundness.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fogles, you mentioned the 360,000, more or less, would come from the state's remaining $5 million, acres, excuse me. Now I'm doing it. And I know that the state has applied for a great deal more than 5 million acres and will take it. You know, there's all sorts of top filing and priority orders and things that I fail to understand. The question about the piece of federal legislation that this resolution encourages, does that change in any way, propose changing those priority orders, the areas from which the applications can come in? Or is it strictly things for which the state has lands for which the state has already applied?
Senator Keel, through the chair, yes, the state of Alaska has applied to receive. They've filed selections on those 5 million acres that are outstanding. They've actually filed selections on considerably more than those 5 million acres. They've over-selected somewhere in the vicinity of 10 million acres. Now, these numbers may have changed some since I was last at DNR, but as I understand it, they're roughly in the ballpark. So the state is owed 5 million more acres. They have selections on 10 million acres. And in addition to that, they have top filings on another 10 million acres, which are simply lands that the state has selected that have some kind of federal withdrawal on them that currently preclude those lands from being conveyed to the state. Should those withdrawals be lifted at some point, then those selections attach, and the state would be free to choose from those top filed lands also. The state's role right now is to submit requests for conveyance from the Department of Interior. I believe the policy has been to wait somewhat on that so that we can ask the federal government to lift some of these top filings so that some of the more valuable lands, in fact, may be top filed and restricted from conveyance by these withdrawals. So I'm not sure I exactly answered your question, Senator Keel, but that may have been a start, and please follow up.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Fogel, thanks. Great setup. So then the question is, the Fiscal Foundation Act, does that change the way any of the selections, top filings, withdrawals, any of those things work, or is it operating within the frameworks that already exist between the state and the feds, and I know we fight, and just directs 360,000 acres to UA?
Yes, Senator Keel, you're correct. It really does not change any of the foundation of the state's land grants. So all it does, it would be redirecting that 360,000 acres from that 5 million to the university.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Fogel. And so we have a motion to adopt the committee substitute. I've objected for the purposes of discussion, and I'll go ahead and withdraw my objection, and we'll adopt the committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 8, version 32-LS0420/B. Is there any additional questions? Senator Stevens, is there anything you'd like to say?
No, I think this would be a big step forward for the university. It's a long time in coming.
Thank you. Next, we're going to hear public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Do we have anyone online who would like to testify? Do we have anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none online and none in the room, we will close public testimony. Well, thank you for bringing this forward, Senator Stevens. I think it's important that we seek to make the University of Alaska whole. Seeing no further questions, what is the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report CS for Senate Joint Resolution 8, version 32-LS0420/B, out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, CS for SJR 8 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. All right, we're back on the record. Next on our agenda is SB 79, an act relating to sport fishing, hunting, and trapping identification cards. I'd like to invite Senator Keel. Thanks for coming up to make initial comments. Joined by Edric staff to Senator Keel to introduce himself. Please put yourselves on the record and walk us through your bill. We also have a couple folks online for questions, if you could.
Thank you, Mr.
Please
Chairman.
Begin.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jesse Keel. I have the honor of representing Senate District Q. With me today is Edric Carrillo of my office. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 79 is an act of appreciation to veterans who acquired a disability in service to our nation. Today, we provide those service-disabled veterans with a free hunting and fishing license each year. Contrast that, Mr. Chairman, to Alaskans over the age of 60, of whom I often point out that my own representative is one, which she loves. To Alaskans over the age of 60, we provide a free permanent hunting, fishing, and trapping license. Mr. Chairman, I was approached by a constituent of mine who did acquire a more than 50% disability in service to our nation, who asked if it would be possible for the legislature to extend the same courtesy to vets. And I thought that made eminent sense. The numbers are very small, Mr. Chairman. There are not a lot of trapping licenses out there. And so it's important to me that Senate Bill 79 does not materially move us away from the great tradition of consumptive users, sportsmen and women, hunters and fishermen, providing the funding to manage our fish and game resources. We maintain that North American model of wildlife conservation while still honoring the service of these veterans who acquired a disability in service to our nation. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd offered a sectional analysis, but it's a one-section bill, so I think I'd just be repeating myself.
Well, thank you, Senator Keel. Do we have any questions? Okay, seeing none, so just to clarify here, this is simply adding a trapping license to a license that already exists for, yes, Senator Bishop. Right. Am I correct there?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You are correct. Okay. And the bill in the process trues up a little the practice with the letter of the law. We would issue these as permanent cards to our service-disabled vets instead of annual.
Okay. Thank you for that. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Keel, the 50% or greater disability, how did you arrive at that percentage?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to Senator Bishop, that is the existing rule for the free annual hunting and fishing license, so I just copied that over here to the permanent card.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Von Imhoff.
So when you say 50%, is that, I assume a doctor determines that, and then they present, the veteran then presents that now to get the hunting license, some type of verification?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to Senator Von Imhoff, that's correct. We'd use the existing system, and I think there are members of the committee who could probably tell you better than I could how exactly that works, but that is a federal government determination. The state does not second guess it. The state does require a document.
Thank you.
One follow-up. Thank you, Senator Machicki.
So the actual language says having incurred a 50% or greater disability during military service. So if they're no longer disabled at some point afterward, but they became disabled during military service, then the card still remains permanent.
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Machicki, that is my understanding. I would need to double check that with the department and make sure I'm not getting out ahead of current practice.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Okay, I think what we'll do now is move on to public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone online who would like to testify for SB 79. Yes, is that Mr. Richards?
Yes, it is, Chairman Rivak.
Great. Please put yourself on the record and begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Rivak and members of the Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Mark Richards. I'm the Executive Director for Resident Hunters of Alaska. We pronounce our acronym RAC. We're a hunting conservation group with nearly 3,000 members from across the state who advocate for a resident hunting priority and prudent, sustainable wildlife management policies according to the mandates in Article 8 of our state constitution. I'm speaking for RAC today in support of SB 79, and we want to thank Senator Keel for introducing it. We've sent in written comments as well. It is our view that military veterans who are 50% or greater disabled need all the help we can give them to get them back out into the field hunting and fishing. For some reason, the current free hunt fish license we give to resident Alaskans, disabled military veterans, in appreciation for their service and sacrifice, did not also include a free trapping license, as their over 60 years of age PID card does. As you are all aware, being 50% disabled does not necessarily mean one can't still walk or hike to get out into the field. I know of a couple 50% disabled vets that do run trap lines. Others who are more disabled or wheelchair-bound can't run trap lines, but I can tell you that in working with other organizations to help disabled vets get out hunting, the same scenario of helping place them in the field in order to participate in hunting also applies to activities like predator calling in winter using a firearm or bow that sometimes require a trapping license to take certain fur bears. We do not expect any real negative fiscal impact to the Division of Wildlife Conservation if this bill should pass, and indeed it has a zero fiscal note from the department. We fully support the passage of the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. I have a question. We have Maria online. Maybe she could answer it from the Deputy Director, Division of Wildlife Conservation. I'm not going to try and pronounce your last name, because I'll probably get it wrong. But, Maria, do you know how much does a trapping license cost? Do you know? Are you Maria, if you're there, could you please put yourself on the record?
Senator Rivek, it's Maria Gledershusky from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Division of Wildlife Conservation. Senator Keel likely knows how much trapping license costs. I don't have that right in front of me. I apologize.
I got
okay.
It.
Yes.
$25.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Thank you. Do we have any other questions? No one is on the line left to testify, so we're going to close public testimony.
If I can ask a question.
Yes, Senator Stevens.
Senator Keel, if I could.
Well, maybe we'll close. We're going to close public testimony. All right, Senator Stevens.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding. I understand everything so far. It makes a lot of sense. But why is it on line 7 talks about a loan? What is that about?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to Senator Stevens' question, that is one of the alternate means ways of qualifying for the disabled veterans' annual free hunting and fishing license today. So we would again copy that over from the existing statute, and it's a reference to a veterans loan program. I believe it is run by AHFC. I'm going to need to double check that, Mr. Chairman, so that I don't lead the senator astray.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Well, I didn't see how many of these do we anticipate? You know,
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We don't know how many of Alaska's service-disabled veterans are interested in trapping or in shooting certain fur bearers for which you need a trapping license. However, the potential loss is pretty limited. There are fewer than 900 trapping licenses sold annually in the state of Alaska today. So it's inconceivable that every one of those people is a service-disabled veteran. But if they were, 900 times 25 bucks would be our maximum exposure. It's not a material hit to the Fish and Game Fund.
Okay, well, thank you, Senator Keel. Any other questions? All right, well, what we're going to do is we're going to set this bill aside for further consideration, and we're going to move on to the last item on our agenda today, which is SB 64, Shellfish Enhancement Projects. Well, we first heard SB 64 on February 22nd, and we took invited testimony from a few folks. And we also heard from four different industry representatives. Got a bunch of invited testimony, all real good. And our next step today is to hear a recap of the bill and see if there are any further questions and gauge the will of the committee. So, Senator Stevens, if you'd like to provide further comments on SB 64.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this bill provides the legal framework for large-scale shellfish hatchery projects to operate in our state. The goal will be to nurture young shellfish, king crab, razor clams, gooey ducks in their earliest formative stages so they have a better shot at surviving in the wild. And I'd like to turn it over to Tim Lankin if you have any further comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Just to reiterate and affirm, Senator Stevens, this is about strengthening our fisheries portfolio in Alaska. A lot of work has gone into this over the years, and there's a lot of stakeholders interested in seeing it move forward. And probably a healthy amount of public testimony that's ready to go. That's all I have to share for you today.
Well, thank you, Representative or Senator Stevens and Mr. Lampkin. Are there any questions? All right, we're going to open public testimony. Public testimony on SB 64 is now open. Is there anybody online who would like to testify? Actually, there are a few. If we could start with Francis Leach. Please put yourself on the record and begin.
Good afternoon, Chair Ravak and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Frances Leach, and I'm the Executive Director of United Fishermen of Alaska, commonly referred to as UFA. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 64. For your reference, we also sent in a letter of support dated February 23rd. UFA is the largest commercial fishing organization in Alaska, composed of 37 multi-gear and regional commercial fishing groups. We support Senate Bill 64 and its companion bill, House Bill 41. In 2014, UFA created a resolution supporting the Alaska Mariculture Initiative. In this initiative, we reiterated our support of a ban on all finfish farming, but support environmentally sound programs for the aquatic farming of shellfish and marine plants. By allowing large-scale shellfish enhancement and restoration projects, it will open the door to renewable economic development. It will also allow ASME to promote aquatic farm products, giving them a platform to grow consumership. Currently, the state of Washington is the largest producer of farmed shellfish in the United States, with an annual sales value which exceeds $100 million, employing directly and indirectly over 3,200 people with over $27 million in payroll and an estimated total economic contribution of $270 million. This bill can mean business for Alaska. With business also comes the concern of environmental impact, which I know has been expressed in some of the comments of the opponents of this bill. Thankfully, this bill provides environmentally friendly protocols for the development of mariculture and provides means to increase the harvest of shellfish in a sustainable manner. Scientific studies will be essential for the success of mariculture in Alaska, and we have faith that the Department of Fish and Game will do due diligence in conducting safe permitting. Additionally, the mariculture production has been proven to help combat some of the environmental challenges our oceans face, like ocean acidification. In closing, UFA thanks Senator Stevens for bringing this bill forward, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you for being here to give your testimony, Francis. Next, we're going to move on to Alan Parks. Alan, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, my name's Alan Parks. I'm from Homer, Alaska. As a young boy, I departed to Homer Harbor, beginning a career in commercial fishing that lasted 38 years. For the bulk of those years, I was involved in what I term as a community-based fisheries, local vessels with local crews delivering to shore-based processors and markets. For some of those years, I was involved in what I term industrial fisheries. Those are primarily vessels with absentee ownership or corporate-owned. I've been elected official. I've been a member of the many local committees in Homer, spent 10 years as a staff member of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, and also served on the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council's Teller Sea Lion Committee. I oppose SB 64. To be clear, do not interpret my opposition in any way that I do not support Alaska commercial fishing community. To be clear, for 38 years, my primary source of income came from commercial fishing. Commercial fishing put food on my table, shoes on my kids, and a roof over my head. In fact, I believe that my opposition to SB 64 does more to support the working waterfront and fishing families of coastal communities than in support of it. I believe this is true because of what I do know. As I understand, SB 64 uses the statutes that govern the salmon hatcheries, including how aquaculture associations are formed, cost recovery is conducted, and access to the Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program by simply removing salmon from those statutes and inserting crab. I have many concerns, but I want to specifically speak about the loan program and cost recovery and how it has functioned for Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association, CIAA. And I'm not trying to pick on them, but it's the only information I have about how the loan program works. The loans are to be secured with collateral. CIA's balance sheet of 1/15/2021 states they have $14 million in assets. And they also have $16 million in debt from the Alaska Fisheries Enhancement Loan Program. Most of it is. I don't have all the information, but this is what their balance sheet says. The state leases the Tutka Bay hatchery to CIAA for $25 a year. On the balance sheet, CIAA says that the lease is valued at $484,000. On the balance sheet, CIAA states they have $2 million in infrastructure at the Tutka Bay hatchery. Now, I don't know what the details of the lease are, but those are buildings with foundations. So if and when they do leave from Tutka Bay Hatchery, it's hard saying what exactly is theirs and what is the state's under their lease agreement. I think that I know for a fact that the cost recovery for that hatchery operation, primarily the fish produced primarily go to cost recovery. For every five fish, three go to the hatchery and two go to common property. I just think that in all due diligence, what I think should happen is that you guys, the state of Alaska, and you guys serving there on behalf of the public should ensure that what we have going on now is actually doing what it's supposed to do across the board. Many hatcheries are successful, but to say that the cookie cutter it in to what we have going on now is just not good. I mean, I'm not against promoting crab, but there should be, you know, if we need to have science to figure this out, we should wait till the science is available. If we need to figure out what
financing is these are going to take. Let's figure out how our loan program is working. What am I seeing wrong about this balance sheet of Cook Inlet Aquaculture? Do I have it wrong? I don't know. It's right there in front of me. I read it. If I was sitting in your spot, what I would do is I would do a forensic audit of CIAA as an example, or some other hatchery, or the loan program in general, or the fisheries enhancement loan program. What are they doing with our money? I mean, we're not, the state is having, primarily you guys are struggling to balance the books. And that's what I really would appreciate you guys making sure that you don't go down the rabbit hole.
Well, thank you, Mr. Parks. We're going to move on to other testifiers, but if you do have additional written testimony, please email it to us at ssta@akleg.gov, and we would appreciate hearing that from you, and we'll include it with the package. Next, we'll move on to Ms. Nancy Hillstrand. Nancy, if you could please keep your remarks to 2 minutes. Please put yourself on the record and begin.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Hello? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm with Pioneer Alaskan Fisheries. We were incorporated in 1964, and we fished crab and shrimp for over 50 years, and we still do. And I am opposed to HB 64, and the reason is I also worked for hatcheries for a 21-year period for Fred Division. And Fred Division was created prior to statutes being made, and they were put there as over 120 people in that division that oversaw the statutes. What we're doing here, Fred Division no longer exists. There is no oversight in Fish and Game to be able to do a good job with something as huge as this. There is no scale. There's no stopgap. You look what's happened with the salmon hatcheries. We've gotten up to 2 billion fish being released, and there's more than enough pink salmon already in the ocean. What is, you know, we just have to wonder what is going on. Please take the time to read the, I had sent in the ADF&G internal review of salmon hatcheries, and I see that they doubled up on my comments and my written comments, so they must not have gotten that internal review to you, so I just sent it to you again. But I think it's really important that you read that, because it's an internal review, over 300 pages from Fish and Game, showing the non-compliance of hatcheries in Prince William Sound. And that way you'll get just some idea, not from me, but from the actual Fish and Game biologists and managers from the region that saw how many problems there were. It's a decade old, but still the same things happen, or are happening. We have major straying going on all over the state, and I don't see that coming to you in the enhancement reports that come out to you annually. I only see happy talk coming out of those, and I would ask that you would start to, you know, ask for the good and the bad, because you need to have a balanced view on what's going on so you can make the right decisions. Please talk to the people, the biologists within the Department of Fish and Game. You can talk to an appointee, but you're not talking to an actual crab biologist. And they're well aware of AK crab and all the things that have gone on that brought this bill to where it is right now. But I think at that point we need to go one little steps, not big steps like this one is, because this is a very dangerous bill. And I think it's really important that we realize there is no oversight for this if the cat gets out of the bag, and it's very, very expensive. And for the state to think it's only needs a fiscal note of zero, Fish and Game is in this bill, I mean, stated, what, 40 times maybe, and the Board of Fisheries. And I'm just very concerned because I see that a lot of the statutes in the salmon hatcheries are not being utilized. They do not use the Board of Fish like they should to amend the permits, for instance. So, and we're working through that with the hatchery committee with the Board of Fisheries. And it's just a lot of struggle because no one will come to the table and talk this out. So please ask for a review of impartial people so we can have a group talk and come to the right decision here, because to pass something as big as this, is you're asking for trouble, and I just ask that you get a better counsel of multiple people, and especially the people within Fish and Game that work with the resources, not an appointee. And I thank you very kindly for taking my testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. We're going to – do we have any testifiers in the room? Seeing none and seeing no more online, we're going to close public testimony. I wouldn't like – we have several folks online for questions. I would like to I'd like to hear from Sam Raybong from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Sam, could you please put yourself on the record and maybe speak to some of what we just heard and any comments you might have?
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Rebeck and members of the committee. My name is Sam Raybong. I'm currently the Director of Commercial Fisheries Division with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Yeah, some of the stuff that we've heard just recently, previously, stems from what I would characterize misunderstanding or a gross misinformation about our programs. And I heard several statements about TETCA, for example. The department owns the TETCA Lagoon Hatchery and does not lease it out. We contract its operation to Cook Inlet Aquaculture Corporation at no cost to the state. So there's no $25 lease or anything like that. We maintain ownership of it. It's a contract that they operate it and pay all the expenses associated with operating it. That's one thing. I could go on about that, but I'll move on. So the internal review that was mentioned, that was done about 2006. And since that point, we worked with the hatchery operator, and the internal review has been resolved in writing. There's no longer any concerns. All of the hatcheries that operate in the state of Alaska as private nonprofits have been individually reviewed, and all of those documents are published and available on our website. They've been reviewed for compliance and adherence to our statutes, regs, and policies, and they're all in compliance. The straying point that was brought up is a valid concern, and that is why we have the safeguards in place that we do have. I would point out that pink salmon have been released from hatcheries in Prince William Sound since the mid-70s, and at the current level since the mid-90s. And we have had three of the four highest wild stock returns in the history of Prince William Sound in the last 10 years. So while straying does occur, it doesn't seem to be having a significant negative effect on natural productivity. And so back to the point of this bill, I mean, there's a lot of things in this bill, but it's primarily designed to enable what we call fishery enhancement or restoration, rehabilitation, and enhancement. Restoration means bringing a depressed stock back to its normal level of productivity that can be naturally sustained. And restoration means bringing a depleted stock or a extirpated stock, a stock that's been fished out and is no longer in an area. So reestablishing that stock and bringing it back to its natural level of productivity. And then the third topic is enhancement. And enhancement means providing additional harvestable surplus above what can be naturally produced in that area. And so if you stop those efforts, it drops back down to natural productivity. So, for example, Kodiak, king crab, they were overfished. And then at the time, coincident with the regime change, those crab stocks have never recovered. They still exist there, but they're in low numbers, too low to have fisheries for well over 30 years now. And our only action that we can take is to not open fisheries. If this bill were to be passed, that would give another tool to try to restore those stocks rehabilitate those stocks to a level where there could be a harvestable surplus. That's just one example. There are many examples, abalone in southeast, other stocks that are depressed, razor clams in Cook Inlet. These are projects that could be permitted if this bill were to pass. And with that, I'll stand down and take any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. I want to hear real quick, too, from Ginny Eckert. We actually have a crab biologist on the line here. Ginny, could you please put yourself on the record and maybe speak to some of the things we heard from your perspective?
Yes, I would be happy to. Thank you, everybody. My name is Ginny Eckert. I'm a professor of fisheries in the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences and also the director at Alaska Sea Grant. I've been testifying or providing scientific input to this bill for some years now, and I just wanted to reflect on the scientific work that's been done to address many of these environmental concerns. The program that I've been a part of, the Alaska King Crab Research, Rehabilitation, and Biology Program, was active for about 10 years, and we've largely been put on hold because the next phase in this project would be to do larger-scale outplanting, which would be required, which would require this bill to pass. During that time period, we published about 30 scientific peer-reviewed publications focusing on many different aspects of king crab biology, including genetic studies, including a variety of outplanting studies, of course, lots of hatchery rearing, trying to develop methods to rear king crab in the hatchery. And through much of this work, we discovered much that is going to be useful in sort of understanding king crab biology and king crab fishery management in general, but also will be very important to understanding the potential impacts and effects of any enhancement that could occur. All the work that we've done so far has been in the field in areas where king crab are not recovering. So much of the outplanting work and all the outplanting experiments that have been done in Kodiak, where to date we've noticed no naturally recurring recruitment. So there's pretty good evidence that king crab in Kodiak are recruitment limited. And there's evidence in many other areas where king crab fisheries have since crashed that these are potentially going to be recruitment limited in the future. So here's an area where research, further research could be needed to better understand the lack of recruitment, and this enhancement bill will allow further studies to happen. I hear the concerns of people that they are worried, and I do agree that there should be restrictions in place, that not just anything should be allowed to be put out in the ocean anytime. But I think this bill does have safety protocols in place. It does have a review period, and I'd be happy to participate in that process in the future to make sure that any enhancement that happened would proceed in a sustainable manner. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time, and thanks to everybody online for being here to offer input and taking your time. We appreciate that. Do we have any questions from any members of the committee?
Just a comment.
Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to tell you that I share Ms. Hillstrand's concerns on the pink salmon releases, not only from Alaska but from Russia and Japan. We're turning out billions of fish, and we're seeing other species coming back with a smaller return weight. I don't know if they're associated, but I would like to understand that better. However, I'm having a hard time making that comparison to this bill. So this is about local shellfish enhancement, and I don't see them as being directly related, as though they're sort of, and I'm not speaking against their public testimony. I'm just telling the committee here that I share some of her concerns in other areas, and I separate that out from this particular shellfish enhancement bill.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Thank you. If I could direct a question to Ms. Eckert, if she's still on.
Ms. Eckert?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for all you're doing. Sam was talking about 30 years ago, but actually it's more like 50 years ago in Kodiak, and I was there in the 70s, and we had a robust a king crab industry, a gigantic industry, and it changed in the 70s, possibly to overfishing, but possibly to regime change as well. So I guess my question of you, Professor Eckert, is it possible if these hatcheries were permitted and it was found to be safe, as you say, is it possible to bring back the king crab fishery in an area like Kodiak?
Senator Stevens, thank you. That's a great question. And I would, I can't tell you the future, but I can tell you what's happened in other places. And there are cases where they have introduced king crab where they're not native. So I'm not suggesting we do that at all. However, in the Barents Sea, north of Russia, king crab were introduced quite successfully. And so the releases happened starting in the 60s. We're not quite sure whether sort of what exactly it was that they did that worked, but they released larvae, they released adults, and now there's quite a vibrant fishery in both Russia and Norway for king crab that were not previously native to the Barents Sea. So I think that suggests that through sort of releases, it could be possible to do restoration work to bring king crab back to areas where they historically used to be and were native. You absolutely would not want to put them in places where they weren't. That would not be, and that is not supported through this bill either.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Eckert. Any other questions? What is the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 64, version 32-LS0421/alpha, out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, SB 64 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. On the record, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Thank you to committee members today and everybody who is here to testify and online to ask questions from the department. Really appreciate your time, your willingness to be here to help with the process. Our next meeting will be on Wednesday, March 17th. We're going to hear SB 97, State Land Sales and Leases Rivers, by direction of the governor. This meeting is now adjourned at 4:31 p.m.